Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Welcome to the official Tennis.com podcast, featuring professional coach and community leader, Kamau Murray.
Welcome to the Tennis.com podcast. I'm your host, Kamau Murray. And what a week in tennis we just saw. We saw Stefanos Tsitsipas play two great matches, one against Diego Schwartzman, and in the final, using the confidence from a match before, match or two before the final, to propel him through the title. It just shows that sometimes your toughest test comes on your way to the final, not necessarily in the final. We saw a very emotional Ukraine team play against Team USA, where some young guns stepped up for USA in their first Fed Cup, like Dez Krajicek. And this week, we've got a very special guest, one of my all-time favorite players, an entertainer, a fan favorite, a favorite in the locker room, and now a tournament director for the IMG Future Stars Tour. And it's the perfect person. He's a junior Australian Open champion, was number one in the world, but not necessarily made number one in the world on the Pro Tour. We had a long talk about his junior career, life leaving home and moving to Paris to pursue professional tennis, maybe some missed opportunities in the Grand Slam against Roger Federer, which could have been his first and only Grand Slam, and then life as a father, and talk about how tennis players and their children don't necessarily come up and follow in their footsteps, and maybe we don't even want them to. You're going to enjoy this one with one of the most entertaining players to ever hit the tennis court, Marcos Baghdatis. Take a listen. Welcome to the Tennis.com podcast. I'm your host, Kamau Murray, and we are here with the man, the myth, and a real legend in the game. From the juniors all the way up until now, he's one of the most well-respected players on tour. He's got an infectious smile. And you think Nick Kyrgios is exciting to watch now? This dude was the first of that entertainment generation. Marcos Baghdatis, welcome, brother.
Hey, Kamau, how are you, man? Thanks for the nice words.
Man, you are a legend with the hair. You know, I was talking to Pat Cash a few months ago, and he talked about he was the first one to take the bandana off and throw it in the stands, right? And then you, Grigor, you know, Rublev, now that's like a thing, but like he was the guy that started it, right? Your hair, and after the match, you know, they used to say you had the best hair on tour. I don't know if you know that.
I never heard that. Yeah. It's the first time I hear that, but yeah, thanks. And talking about Pat, I hope, yeah, I learned a lot from him. Actually, his book was the first one I ever read, was the first book I ever read in my life was his book, so.
Really?
It's funny that, you come up with his name.
Oh, man. Well, now, if you catch him at the bar, he's got more stories that probably can't fit in the book, from COVID to conspiracy theory. I mean, the dude's brain is like something else.
Yeah, great guy. I met him a couple of times. We played some Indian leagues together. Great guy. Great person.
So now, man, you are into your next chapter, right, where you're running the IMG Future Stars Tour there in Athens, Greece. And to me, you're perfect for it because your junior career was legendary, right? I mean, you had the typical career where you grew up in a small island, needed to move to go get better competition. How did you get into this new junior tour, and what was the motivation behind it?
Yeah, I definitely my motivation always, since I retired, I want to somehow give back to kids that are in need, that don't have, you know, big federations. And I think this is a great way, help not only the kids, but also their team, their parents, their coaches, make them understand, but, show them with my experience and my knowledge with all these years that I went through as a young kid, because I left home when I was 14 to France. Just to guide them a bit, give them some kind of advice to to make them understand at a very young age what it is and what you have to go through and the difficulties of becoming a professional tennis player. And I think IMG has done a fantastic job to put this tournament together. And it's actually a big pleasure for me to be able to be part of it as a tournament director.
So we talk about these young kids and their teams. Your dad is a famous tennis dad. And one of his famous words was, "We grew up on a small island. In order for Marcos to get good, we had to go get competition off the island." Tell me what that was like to have to leave home at 14 and move to Paris to travel. Was it like, yes, I get to go? Or was it like, oh, shit, I don't want to go?
It was a bit of both, actually. You know, I wanted to leave because, you know, since I'm a kid, I was a kid. My brothers play tennis. My older brothers play tennis, Marinos and Petros. And you know, they kind of put in my mind that, you know, I'm going to become a professional tennis player and that I'm going to leave one day from Cyprus at a young age and pursue my dream. And yeah, I wanted to go, but once I got there, that's where the difficult part was. You know, the first 4 or 5 months were, honestly, you know, very difficult, crying every night in bed. You know, it wasn't, academies back then wasn't what it is now. You know, you didn't have dorms, you didn't have schools. I had to stay in a family which was allocated like an hour and a half away from the academy. So I had to take the subway alone every morning. And it was really tough, you know, and after training to get the subway back home, you miss your friends, you miss your family. But, you know, I had a goal and I had a dream. And it was to, you know, to play a Grand Slam, a main draw. And I've done a bit better than Grand Slam main draw.
So let me ask you this, because, you know, I got an academy in Chicago and I always, you know, tell people it's tricky. You know, in America, everybody moves to Florida, right? But I always say, you don't really move to Florida to get good. You move to Florida to get competition, right? Mm-hmm. By the time you end up at an academy, you need to be able to kind of hit the ball already, right? And you're going there for a specific purpose. When you left Cyprus, were you already balling at the time, or did you need to actually go and learn the game, right? Or did you just need to go and get more competition?
I needed more competition, definitely. I needed more fitness. My weakness was always the fitness part. You know, I here in Cyprus back then, we didn't have the fitness part really well. I think technique wise, I was pretty okay as a young kid. I could feel things. I could feel the ball. I loved playing the game. You know, I could do a lot of things on the court. And of course I needed to work on my game too, but my main thing that changed was when I started, you know, working a lot on my fitness and also having to compete, you know, with the same level players every day, which is very important. You know, here in Cyprus at one moment, I was kind of the best. At 14 years old, I was number one in the men's category in Cyprus. So I had to go somewhere. And I went to the Academy Bob Rett in Paris. Back then it was a Bob Rett Academy. And Bob Rett, I mean, great, great legend coach, coached so many players and was there. You know, he guided me through a lot of things and helped me develop very fast and understand kind of how to take responsibility in the work I've done, I have to do on the court. And he was a great mentor for me. And of course, the competition and the fitness was very important for me too.
So when you have this tournament coming up, right, with the 12s, what will be your message, right? You're going to probably have, you know, 64 of the best kids, right, from across the country. What are you going to look for, not only just the winner, because sometimes the best player or the best talent doesn't end up winning the tournament, right, at 12 years old. So what in your mind is going to be like the differentiator between these 12-year-olds?
First of all, I mean, the message I want to give out to these young kids, talent without work is nothing. And I think that's very important. And for me, it's to make them understand. I mean, make them understand. Let's say that every day is a learning process. It doesn't matter if you win today the tournament, one of the best tournaments under 12. You know, if you want to become a professional tennis player, you need to plan, you need to sacrifice, you need self-discipline, and you need to work hard. And for me, those are very important things, that the earlier you understand them, which I was lucky to understand at a very young age, the better it is for you. And that's a big message that I, as Marcos, as a person, I want to give back to the young kids. Of course, there are other, you know, technique, different issues. Everybody has, his own story to write and the way he wants to write it. But, you know, it's just to help every individual as much as I can to achieve their dreams.
So out of all you just said, the thing that just popped out of me is self-discipline.
Yes.
When I think about this sport, right, financially it's expensive. So you can't only be improving when someone's on the court telling you to improve, right? You got to be like, grab a basket of balls and go serve. You know what I mean? You got to be sort of self-disciplined and police yourself, especially when you start transitioning for the tour. So you won the Junior Australian Open, right? And again, this is like why you're the perfect person for this. You got Tsonga, Monfils, all these people sort of in that class of juniors at the time. Tell me what that was like, because, you know, I think when I think about kids, I think we all say we want it and we all like maybe think we can do it, but you never really know, right? And very few people actually believe the stuff that they say, right? So when you won the Australian Open, was it like, oh, shit, man, I knew I could do it? Or was it like, whoa, how did this happen?
I think when you set a goal and you believe it, like, I mean, I did with my team back then, to win the Australian Open or to win a Grand Slam Junior was a goal. And if you go there and you win it and you're surprised, then it means you kind of didn't believe it. It was like something. So what I said after the Australian Open was, when I won the juniors, was, this feels good, you know? I want more of this feeling. I want to do the same in the seniors. And I always wanted more. I always wanted something. As a junior, what I'm saying, it was every day I was going to a new tournament, a new event, going into the seniors, everything was new. I wanted to learn. I wanted to improve. And for me, that's very important, you know, every day to, like you said, to have the self-discipline to want to do even better and want to improve and want more is very important.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at newbalance.com.
So, we see a lot of people have great junior careers, right? And sort of struggle with the transition to the tour. You know what I mean? People win the junior slam, people number one in the world on the juniors, but they don't necessarily become number one in the world on tour. When you were making that transition, obviously you had two US Open junior finals, Australian Open champion. Who was the first person on the senior tour to just whoop you so bad it made you think like, damn, this is a different level?
Andre Agassi.
Yeah.
Yeah, I practiced with him 2005 at the US Open. I just practiced with him like an hour and a half. We booked a court together. And, I feed the ball, first ball. The guy is just killing the ball. I'm like, okay, I need, you know.
Warm up.
I want to feel something, you know, like the ball was coming so fast. I get the rhythm, you know, I start to move faster, get the rhythm, you know, my heartbeat's going up because, you know, the intensity is much higher. And then we have a drink and then I go to the net. First volley, I feed the ball and again, he smacks it at me. And I'm like, whoa, I mean, like, this is a way. Yeah, but I learned a lot because it made me think, this is the intensity that I have to put in every ball. We're talking about Andre Agassi here. For me, he was my idol. So I was even scared going into the court with him. And that, you know, that gave me a small idea, a small click in my head that, Marcos, I mean, this is an example for you. And this is it was something new. Like I said, it's something, and you were looking all the time about small things that but this stayed always in my mind. And Andre helped me tremendously that day without even, you know, saying a word. But yeah, I just, you know, I was eager to learn, and I learned that from him. And then all of a sudden, end of the year, I played finals in Basel, and the next year I play the finals of Australian Open. So I think that was a big part of, you know, of my learning step, is just practicing an hour and a half with Andre.
You know, it's funny. So I look at, like, Andre, Pete, Federer, Novak, and I would say that none of those players are very vocal mentors. Like, they're not going to grab a player and sit them down and take you to dinner and talk to you about it. But when you have an opportunity to practice with them, they're teaching you a lesson. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, very purposefully, they're kind of like, this kid can play. He has potential. I'm going to teach him a lesson today, right? I'm going to give him something that he needs. Do you feel that? Is that accurate? Like, do you see that with Rafa and those guys, where it's like they're mentoring without even saying a word?
That's, I think that's exactly it. And that's what, like, I described a bit my practice with Andre, but that was it. It was without saying a word, the guy just showed me what I need to do. And it's up to you to be smart enough to take that, you know, that lesson, like that beating, and take it into positive and you know, and kind of criticize a bit yourself. I think that's very important. And it comes back to the, you know, every day you can learn something. Every day, every single day, every time you step on a court, you know, you have to be open-minded and be able to, you know, be like a sponge, you know, that takes information without anybody telling you, but seeing things, and it's very important. And I think I was really, really good at that.
So you talk about seeing things, right? So you've had, I mean, tremendous career over a long period of time, right? From juniors to pros, Cilic, Tsonga, Agassi, Sampras, Federer, even young boys like Berrettini, right? You've crossed so many generations. Build your perfect player, because now you're building, right? Now you're like, got the juniors about to come. Now yeah. You're like going to be giving them wisdom. You're looking for like, build your perfect player out of the guys you played against.
Definitely. I mean, the serve, it's either, I would go with Isner instead of Karlovic. Of course, Isner has more variety for me. He has a kick serve. Then forehand, I would go with Federer, not because it's the hardest or the fastest. Sorry, it's how early he takes it and how it disguises his movement. You don't see where the ball, you know, where you don't read it so easily. Let's say on the backhand side, I would go with Novak Djokovic for sure. Return Novak Djokovic puts a lot of pressure. That back and down the line of Novak, it's, you know, it's a killer. Volleys, I would go again with Roger Federer. I think pretty solid. And then what's left? Attitude, movement. Let's go with attitude. I love Rafa's attitude.
I think
the guy's, for me, the best in everything. You never see him complaining. You know, he's all the time there fighting, not throwing rackets. You know, he's so stable, such a professional, such a class act on the court. And movement, it's tough because there is a lot of players, but I would go maybe with Gael Monfils for that.
Yeah.
Because of, you know, his stretch, and he covers the court amazingly good. And I guess that's about it from the tennis side.
That's perfect. I was waiting on Guy from the movement and Rafa from just the intensity, the attitude. So let me ask you this. Who is the best player you know, besides you, to never win a slam? I mean, I always think back to like Gael Monfils playing Federer at the French Open.
Yeah.
And to me, like, that was like his time.
In the semis, right? He lost in the semis. It was two sets to love up or something.
Two sets to love up and like five match points. And it was like, that was like his time. And I don't know that he ever fully recovered from that. So who's the best, maybe even talent, like best player you know, never to win a slam?
I think it's a very difficult question because of the three, even four with Andy Murray.
Yeah.
In my time, I think it was to win a Grand Slam, you had to beat one, maybe two of those guys. and I think that's, I mean, there is people that did it, of course, but I think there were a lot of talented players that could have won a Grand Slam. We see Tsonga, like you said, Monfils, Nishikori had his chance against Cilic, but Cilic took it. There is many. I mean, Ferrer, a guy like Ferrer, I mean, could have won a Grand Slam. Berdic, we're talking about a lot of players that could won a Grand Slam but didn't because of those four guys who were dominating. Okay, the three were dominating in Grand Slams. Andy Murray played so many finals. But so it's a difficult question. I think there is a lot of them, and still now you see last year there's so many talented guys like Zverev, Tsitsipas, and they cannot go through Djokovic still. And now we see Rafa. I mean, Djokovic's not playing. Rafa comes back and Rafa wins the Australian Open. So you can imagine the level these guys are. It's just a joke.
And you see now, without them at Miami, how it's wide open, right? Yes. Like, if they're not at the tournament, there's probably 10 guys that can win.
Exactly. So,
I'm looking forward to that, though, because, for a while, it's kind of like, all right, one of these three guys, who's on the same side? Is it Rafa and Fed on the same side? Is it Novak and Fed on the same side? Whoever makes it off this side is going to win, right? But now, without those three, right, sort of in the draw,
everything's open.
It's wide open.
Yeah, it could be 8 or 10 guys, definitely. I mean, able to win a Grand Slam.
So, you did a stint where you were coaching for a while. Tell me about how that was.
Very little while.
Very little while. Tell me about how it came to be and what that experience was like. Because coaching for me is a passion, right? I love coaching, but it's a challenge, right? Because especially at this level, you're not in full control. You're kind of working for the player. The player's the boss, but you're trying to boss them around and work with them and help them. But at the end of the day, they can say, you know what, go fuck off, right? Yeah. So tell me about that little brief coaching stint.
I loved it. First of all, I was lucky enough to train with Elina, which is an unbelievable girl, Gael also in the team. And, I did like 15 days of off season with them because we kind of decided it late and then went to Australia with them. And it was lovely. Unfortunately, COVID came and with three kids, it was very difficult for me to travel anymore. And I needed to schedule, and it was very difficult to have a schedule during the COVID times. But yeah, I loved it. And I would love to, try it again or do it again. And, I learned a lot, how to, because I think it's important you control your emotions a lot. You're laughing, so you know what I mean, right? So it's important to control the emotions. I think it's something different. It's something that, as a person, I want to improve in that, of course. And the more you go through it, the more you improve, of course. But I just would love to do it again because it's something that motivates me and something that I love. And of course, working with a player, helping him, it's it's something important for the next chapter of my life.
It's funny you mentioned, and this is like a sign of a good coach, right? You mentioned the need to improve even as a coach. And like now, I look back, and I've been coaching since I was 17 years old, right? I look back at my 17-year-old self and was like, damn, I sucked. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. 42 now, but it's like, man, 10 years ago, I sucked as a coach. Like, I wasn't that good. You know what I mean? Yeah. I didn't really, you know, was, you know, talking too much or not talking enough or not speaking at the right time or not, you know, I was like, wow, it's like you really sort of evolve, right? Yeah. You had the chance to work with Patrick back when he was first starting. How would you rate Patrick then versus now?
It's tough because Patrick, I mean, he wasn't actually my coach. He was never my coach. I had always a coach with me who traveled with me, you know, when I was just at the academy, Patrick would, you know, be there. I worked with Patrick, let's say maybe 2 or 3 weeks throughout my career in some tournaments when my coach couldn't come or, you know, family issues and that. So, you know, I think he evolved a lot. I think he's doing great things for tennis, for young kids. And he has a very good, you know, he has a very good marketing team that, you know, does very good in the marketing. But, you know, I think he also must have improved a lot. I didn't speak to him for a long time. And from what I see, I mean, he's having great players next to him. And, you know, he's becoming the coach he wanted always to be.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
So I got 3 kids, right? Daughter, 2 boys. I did a talk with Macy. And, you know, you think about all these great coaches and great players whose kids don't play, right? And I always say my kids are kind of like, eh, I don't want to play, right? Because I think it takes daddy away, right? Tennis takes daddy away, and I got to watch him on the TV when I want him here, right? Do your kids play?
Yeah, I mean, they do because they have to. No, I'm joking. No, they do. I mean, my older daughter does. She plays 4 times a week. But, you know, it's just for fun. We want me and Carolina, my wife, we want them to just play for fun. It's something that, you know, runs in the family. And, you know, she was playing as when she was younger. She stopped for a while and then she asked us to play again, which was very positive. So we are not pushing her. It's something that she wants to do. And like you said, but she doesn't want us to be next to her when she's playing. So, you know, we just let her take her to the club. She plays with her coach. We have a coffee and we go home. And the taxi driver taking them there and coming back home. So yeah, the most important thing for me is for my kids to enjoy what they do, to have fun. And I mean, tomorrow they tell me they want to be a professional tennis player. You know, I would make them think twice, you know. I would make them think twice, definitely.
So let's talk about thinking twice, right? So you've been, I mean, all the levels from juniors to, you know, to the tour. Give me your favorite stop and your one place where you're like, eh, I never got to go back there.
Oh, yeah, there's some, you know, futures in Uzbekistan. I mean, don't get me wrong. I have nothing against Uzbekistan, but, you know, there were tough moments where, you know, you had to travel to places, you know, and, you know, get through. And also coming from Cyprus, you know, I didn't have the
red flag.
Yeah, I mean, the right flag to get some wild cards and, you know, to get an easy access to ATP tournaments. I remember in 2003, when I finished number one junior, I also finished top 200 in the ATP. So I that year, I think I played more than 100 matches. So yeah, and was traveling to futures around, you know, around the world if it was. And I remember one time I had to travel from Uzbekistan because I got in last minute in the qualies of US Open. So I had to travel. I played the finals. So I had to travel on Monday. I arrived in the States on Monday night, and I had to play against Stipe Saravic on Tuesday. So yeah, I mean, it was like, yeah. So I think it was, I mean, those, you know, those small tournaments where you had to grind and everything. But I'm saying now that I wouldn't want to go back. But at the end of the day, you know what? I learned so much from those countries, so much from those tournaments. I learned, like we spoke before, the self-discipline, the, you know, not having everything all the time ready for you. You had to grind, you had to fight. And I think, you know, maybe it's a mistake that I said those tournaments, but but because I learned a lot from it. But, you know, yeah, it's the way it is.
And your favorite stop on tour? Doesn't have to be a Grand Slam. It could be anywhere. It could be Monte Carlo. It could be anywhere.
I would... Sydney.
Beautiful.
The tournament, Sydney, yeah. I think it's a beautiful place, beautiful city. That's where I met my wife. So yeah, I would go with Sydney.
Australian summer is a good time.
Yeah.
So last question. You had Australian Open. I think you have two sets to love on Roger Federer. One set to love on Roger Federer.
And
right?
A break.
That was and a break, right? A set and a break, right?
Double break point.
A break and a double break point.
Yeah.
Somebody's going to tie. I'm surprised that of all the coaches and players, nobody's written a book called A Set and a Break.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because if you think about the number of matches you have a set and a break and it just goes the other way. So tell me about that match, for both emotionally, right, in the match and then after, right? Because I think you talk about some of these junior tournaments, right? And I always look for, like, now as a coach, I look at these girls, right? And they can all hit the ball. They can all move. They're great athletes. They're all, like, doing the right shit. But some of them can't finish, right? And so when I look at coach, I look at these 12-year-olds. I'm like, okay, who can finish, right? You know what I mean? Tell me about that match, right? Because I remember that match, and I was like, oh, that's a tough. He's going to remember that match for the rest of his life.
And I did, and I do still, you know. And it pops, you know, always there was – I could have won that match, you know, and to start with that match, you know, I had a great plan in place with my coach, you know, to aggress Roger every second serve, to be very aggressive and yeah, take risk, because I played him 2 weeks, 3 weeks before in Doha, and I lost 6-4, 6-4. And I remember I came out of the court again, the learning process. And told my coach, you know, next time I play him, I would, you know, aggress his second serve like crazy, aggress his backhand and move him all the court. Don't give him any rhythm, like be so aggressive, backhand, forehand down the lines. And that's what I did for a set and a half. I mean, set and a half. And then emotions hit me. Emotions hit me. I remember the moment. It was 7-5 for me. Or 6-4, 7-5 or 6-4 for me first set. I was a breakup in the second. He broke me back. Okay, everything was under control. And then at 6-5 for him in the second set, I was serving, go 40 love up, going into the tiebreak. And that's where I start thinking, like, if I go to the tiebreak, because I was winning my serving games easy, and you know he was struggling a bit. You know, I'm two sets to love up. And I start thinking about the future. I start thinking about, you know, I'm there. And all of a sudden, I hit three double faults, one forehand on first error. And all of a sudden, he breaks me and he's 7-5 up. And the second, I mean, we're once at all. And from then onwards, everything came out. All the energy, all the adrenaline. I even start cramping on the calves. You know, I don't know. Something happened emotionally. And yeah, just inexperience, not ready for the moment, maybe, or I don't know, too emotional. Something happened there, and the thing is, when you start thinking in these big moments or any match, if you start thinking future and you're not at the moment, you're not at the present time, it slips. I mean, you know, it slips away so fast that you cannot control it.
Yeah, I remember that. But that's why you're the perfect person to do what you're doing now, ushering the next generation into this sport, right? And identifying them young. One of the things I would like to see in the U.S. is more of what you're doing, right? The IMG, the Future Stars. How do we get one of those here? Because I feel like we have, you know, USTA, 12 and under, 16 under, 18 and under. And these kids in the States, they think they're so good until they go overseas. You know what I mean? It's like...
It's in every country. Yeah.
So we need you to bring this event to Chicago, and we'll find every good 12-year-old and bring them. You know what I mean? Because I think exposure, right? You talk about you being on a small island and getting out and seeing the big world, right? It's just, you know, getting exposure, bring us kids. But I would love to have you bring that event to Chicago. So we can get some of these 12-year-olds who don't even know about this event. I mean, there's so many people don't even know about this. Now, how did you all pick the kids?
Yeah, I mean, it was IMG. They have a committee where, you know, they all the kids can send videos to IMG, and IMG has a committee where they choose the best, which what they think the scouts and the committee and the ex-coaches. They choose the best videos and they invite the kids over to this event. It's 24 boys and 24 girls under the ages of 11 and 12 years old, under 12. And they're once they get into in Athens, everything is covered for them: hotels, accommodation, food, they have some fun activities. There is how you say, like an exhibition match between Alcaraz and Hurtsak. There is non-tennis activities also, like night movies, treasure hunts. There is also some workshops with famous coaches that come and do some workshops. So, you know, they interact with not only the tennis players, but also their team, their parents, you know, to guide these kids and their teams into the professional sports of tennis. There is a lot of things outside the tennis court that will help, you know, every single one of the persons that are there to have an understanding of you know, what's going on in the professional world.
Well, man, it's been great having you on. I appreciate the time. I want to wish you luck with the event. I think it's what tennis continues to innovate and try to find ways to grow the sport and like make it bigger and better, like basketball and soccer and that kind of thing. So, you know, you've been a gift to the game on the court and now continue to be a gift to the game off the court. So I want to just take this opportunity to say I appreciate you. I enjoy watching you. I used to love the long hair, even though I never had any. Right?
why don't you try the beard?
Oh, I'm trying, man. It's like, you know, I'm trying, you know.
Oh, my God.
Well, man, I hope to see you soon, brother. I want to wish you luck, man, and all the best.
You too, man. Take care, and I hope to see you soon somewhere.
This has been the Tennis.com podcast with the legend Marcos Baghdatis. Thanks for listening.